I won't let my active psoriatic arthritis joint symptoms define me.
Emerge as you. Tremfya guselkumab is proven to significantly reduce joint pain, stiffness, and swelling in adults with active psoriatic arthritis. Some patients even reported less fatigue as assessed by survey 1 week prior. Results may vary. Tremfya is taken by injection 6 times a year after 2 starter doses at week 0 and 4.
Serious allergic reactions may occur. Tremfya may increase your risk of infections and lower your ability to fight them. Before treatment, your doctor should check you for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms of infection, including fever, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough. Tell your doctor if you had a vaccine or plan to.
Emerge as you. Learn more about Tremfya, including important safety information, at Tremfya.com or call 1-877-578-3527. See our ad in Food & Wine magazine. For patients prescribed Tremfya, cost support may be available.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Selling smoothies is what I do. But for small business insurance, I chose my State Farm agent. He's a small business owner, too, so he knew how to help me personalize my policies. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to an agent today.
Episode 232 for the Love of the Game on the Bleav Podcast Network is brought to you by Bet Online. The holiday season is upon us. It's Thanksgiving week. That means a full slate of NFL games on Thursday, a game on Black Friday, but not just NFL. We also have NBA season and NHL season are hitting their stride, basically mid-season form. We've got college football, big time games there, and you can find everything you need at Bet Online. Bet Online is your number one destination for all your sports wagering info. So head to Bet Online today and remember to use promo code Bleav and get a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. That's B-L-E-A-V to get a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet Online, where the game starts. With that said, episode 232 for the Love of the Game. Let's get this
good work. Evening, ladies and gentlemen. How's everybody doing tonight?
All right.
I'd like to welcome to the stage the lyrically acclaimed.
Woo.
I like this young man because when he came out with the phrase, he went from ashy to classy.
All right.
I like that.
All right.
So everybody in the house, give a warm round of applause for the Notorious B.I.G. The Notorious B.I.G., ladies and gentlemen. Give it up for him, y'all. Never been as broke as me. I like that. When I was young, I had 2 pair of leads. Besides that, the pinstripes and the gray. The one I wore on Mondays and Wednesdays. I'm throwing tigers on my shirt and alligators. You want to see the inside?
Welcome back. Welcome back. Welcome back. Episode 232 for the Love of the Game on the Bleav Podcast Network with yours truly. It's ATH Aaron Tobin Hess. We're back in the saddle. We are back behind the mic. And normally during the NFL season, I start off recapping the New York football teams, what they did this weekend, recapping thoughts around the league. If you've gotten to listen to my show, that's generally the general cadence of how this goes. We're going to table that for a recurring guest. So I'm not going to go around the league with the NFL, but just a quick things on the state of New York football, and it's not very good. I mean, the Giants won a game, 31-19 against the Commanders. I think it says more about the Commanders than it does the Giants. Tommy DeVito outdueled the Commanders, actually played pretty well, had like 150 passer rating, hit Saquon Barkley on a couple of touchdowns to Darius Slayton. Tommy DeVito, in 73 pass attempts, has 5 touchdown passes. Zach Wilson, in 306 pass attempts, has 5 touchdown passes. I mean, Tommy DeVito had his moment. Now, is this good for the Giants' long-term future in terms of being able to draft their next franchise quarterback? No, it's not great. It's not great for the tank. However, we're going to talk about this with a recurring guest in just a matter of moments. You cannot expect a team full of professionals to go out and lose, or at least try to lose, every single week for over 2 months. It's just not possible. Guys have pride. Guys are playing for contracts. You're going to win a game here or there. It's just going to happen. So does this take the Giants out of the Caleb Williams, Drake May sweepstakes? Not necessarily. We'll see what happens the rest of the year, but not necessarily. They cannot win against the New England Patriots next week. That's for certain. That is an absolute must lose. But if this was just the token win that the New York Giants got and they finished 3-14, it's not the worst thing. If that's the case, they will probably be in position to get Caleb Williams or Drake May. That's just my sense, because you look around the league, Arizona with Kyler Murray is going to be better. I think the Bears have some fight. They're going to be better. And if the Bears end up with the number one or number two pick, both of them, considering they have Carolina trading up to get Bryce Young, that looks like it's a mess right now. But the Bears aren't taking both Caleb Williams and Drake May. So the Giants are still in the mix. So Giant fans who are up in arms about the Giants winning a game, it will be okay. But we cannot beat the New England Patriots next week. As for the Jets, they got absolutely shellacked against the Buffalo Bills, 32-6. Zach Wilson has been benched in favor of Tim Boyle. Zach Wilson will not be starting the game on Black Friday against the Dolphins. Tim Boyle will be starting. As for the Jets long term, I don't want to hear about the Aaron Rodgers comeback stuff. There was a rumor that maybe he'd start practicing in December. Put that to rest. Their season's over. I said it last week, but you still heard Jet fans holding on to hope. Well, that hope is no longer. Put the Jets to bed. The season is over. The New York Knicks. The Knicks.
Dogs are an important part of our lives, and keeping them protected is a top priority, especially against nasty parasites. That's why you got to check out NexGard Plus, ofoxaconazole, moxidectin, and pyrantel chewable tablets. NexGard Plus chews provide one-and-done monthly protection that kills fleas and ticks, prevents heartworm disease. Plus, it treats and controls roundworms and hookworms. That's a whole lot of protection packed into a delicious beef-flavored, soft chew designed to make monthly dosing easy and enjoyable. So the next time you're at the vet, ask about NexGard Plus chews. They're the one-and-done monthly parasite protection you want for your dog. Use with caution in dogs with a history of seizures or neurologic disorders. Dogs should be tested for existing heartworm infection prior to starting a preventive.
I won't let my active psoriatic arthritis joint symptoms define me.
Emerge as you. Tremfya guselkumab is proven to significantly reduce joint pain, stiffness, and swelling in adults with active psoriatic arthritis. Some patients even reported less fatigue as assessed by survey 1 week prior. Results may vary. Tremfya is taken by injection 6 times a year after 2 starter doses at week 0 and 4.
Serious allergic reactions may occur. Tremfya may increase your risk of infections and lower your ability to fight them. Before treatment, your doctor should check you for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms of infection, including fever, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough. Tell your doctor if you had a vaccine or plan to.
Emerge as you. Learn more about Tremfya, including important safety information, at Tremfya.com or call 1-877-578-3527. See our ad in Food & Wine magazine. For patients prescribed Tremfya, cost support may be available.
For 25 years, nothing has tasted better after a hard day's work than a Mike's Hard Lemonade. It's because since day one, Mike's has been making lemonade the hard way. We use 3 kinds of lemons, all hand-picked from family farms, then blended to perfection in cold press to create the epic hard lemonade you know and love. Mike's Hard Lemonade, Hard days deserve a hard lemonade. Mike's is hard. So is Prism. Don't drive drunk. Premium all beverage with flavors. All registered trademarks used under license by Mike's Hard Lemonade Company, Chicago, Illinois.
Now 8-5. It was nice seeing them win back-to-back games on consecutive nights. The Knicks historically never win in the second night of a back-to-back. And I know it's the Washington Wizards who stink. I know it's the Charlotte Hornets who stink. But it's nice to get wins on consecutive nights and winning the second night of a back-to-back because the Knicks never do it. So way to take care of business, New York Knicks. Jalen Brunson seems to have found his shooting inside the arc. He was actually just named Player of the Week in the Eastern Conference this week. Just having a monster week. 28.5 points a game, 6.5 assists a game, shooting a blistering 54% from three. Unbelievable. He's had a really nice stretch. Julius Randle has played better. The ball seems to be moving a little bit more. There seems to be more passes. Even Julius Randle's getting into the act of passing. Dante DiVincenzo had a monster game. 25 points against the Hornets, filling in for Quentin Grimes, who hurt his hand. I got to give major props to Mitchell Robinson, who's leading the league in offensive rebounds, averaging like 10 offensive rebounds a game. He's been a beast. He's been an all-defense caliber player, and there's a lot of competition in that respect so far this NBA season, especially for the bigs. Bam Adebayo, Giannis, Brooke Lopez, Rudy Gobert, who's probably the front runner right now after everybody, including myself, has poured dirt on Rudy Gobert. Got to give Rudy Gobert his props. But Mitchell Robinson's in that conversation. And I've never been a huge Mitchell Robinson fan. I said he's replaceable. I still think he's somewhat replaceable because I don't think the Knicks lose a whole lot when Isaiah Hartenstein plays. But Mitch has been great. So kudos to Mitchell Robinson. Kudos to the Knicks right now. They have a tough one tonight on the road. Last road game of this road trip against the surging Minnesota Timberwolves. We're going to get to them in a second and Anthony Edwards. But the Knicks are a good team. They are a good team. I'm not sure they are a great team. I'm not sure they have the capability as currently constructed to be a great team. But the Knicks are a good team. In fact, they may be a very good team. So kudos to the Knicks. They're playing well. Take care of business against teams that you're supposed to beat. Around the NBA, just a couple of thoughts. The Dallas Mavericks started out hot. They're now 5-5 in their last 10 games. They cannot guard a nosebleed. Outside of Luka and Kyrie Irving, who scares you on the offensive end for them? I mean, Tim Hardaway Jr. shot the lights out from three, but we're not really scared of him. As much as I like Josh Green, I like what I've seen from Derek Lively, the rookie. They're not frightening. Grant Williams, eh. The regression for the Dallas Mavericks is coming, all right? When they were 9-2, you should have sold your stock right there and shorted. It's a terrible defensive team. It does not have a whole lot of playmakers, guys who can make plays for others. And, you know, Kyrie Irving is a nutcase who's waiting to tank a season. Short the Dallas Mavericks. You're already starting to see it. When they play against good teams who can score, they can't get a single stop. As for the other teams at the top of the West, Denver is at right now third in the West, but I will say Denver is still the best team in the West. The next three teams at the top of the West, the top four, Oklahoma City, Minnesota, and the Sacramento Kings. And I'm not sure this is flukes, by the way. I'm not sure this is a fluke. Any of these teams. Let's start with the Minnesota Timberwolves. Karl Anthony Towns still makes me nervous. I'm still not 100% sure what I'm getting from him, but right now, he and Gobert have been excellent together. Cat's shooting the lights out. Gobert has been great defensively. Karl Anthony Towns is quieting a lot of doubters. Yeah, the contract still stinks. Yeah, he's not a number one on a really good team. But guess what? He doesn't have to be because Anthony Edwards right now is one of the 7 or 8 best players in the NBA. He's might be the best shooting guard in the NBA right now already. This is year 3, I think. He's just incredible. He's absolutely breathtaking to watch, and he does not give a shit. He doesn't. A couple of nights ago, he went at Draymond Green. Draymond was barking at him, woofing at him after a foul, and Ant Edwards did not back down and proceeded to absolutely torch the Golden State Warriors that night. I love watching Anthony Edwards play. This Minnesota thing is for real, and Anthony Edwards is for real. As for another one of those teams, Oklahoma City, a team that I said is going to be a top 5 seed in the West this year. Well, if Ant Edwards isn't the best shooting guard in the league right now, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is the other guy who has a claim to that throne. And Devin Booker too, by the way. But the Suns haven't started out as hot as those other teams. But SGA is insane right now. Insane. His mid-range pull-up game is nuts. And like Anthony Edwards, when he wants to clamp down defensively, both those guys can clamp down defensively. The masterclass that he put on against the Golden State Warriors Saturday night was outrageous. A 40-piece, good defense on Steph Curry down the stretch. SGA was first-team All-NBA last year, and we're seeing that he may be first-team All-NBA this year, along with Anthony Edwards. Wild. Those guys are outrageously good. As for the rest of the roster on Oklahoma City, I mean, I love this roster. Chet Holmgren is incredible. Absolutely incredible. He's on pace right now as a 7-foot guy to shoot 50-40-90. His offensive skill set right now in terms of offensive polish is better than Victor Wembanyama's. I'm not saying he's as good of a player as Victor is right now, but Chet Holmgren is absolutely no slouch. Those guys are just outrageously good as rookies. I know Chet Holmgren, it's technically year 2 for him. He missed all of last year, but Chet Holmgren has been bonkers. I love guys like Jalen Williams. I still love Lou Dort. Kayson Wallace, the rookie, we'll get to him in a second, but he's been good for them off the bench. It looks like they found another guy. Isaiah Joe makes threes. Oklahoma City is absolutely frightening. And then there's the Sacramento Kings, who were the number 3 seed in the West last year, and they're not slowing down because De'Aaron Fox might be one of the 15 best players in the NBA. He was named Western Conference Player of the Week this week. He's just been outrageously good. Outrageously good. 32.5 points a game, almost 5 rebounds a game, over 6 assists a game. Money. He's absolutely money. One of the fastest guys in the league. Plays incredibly well with Domantas Sabonis, who is probably the 3rd best center in the NBA, averaging 20-12-7 assists. The Kings are for real. And Keegan Murray, who a lot of guys, including myself, were very high on coming into his second year in the league, hasn't mattered yet, at least. And you would assume that he's going to turn it around. Malik Monk is a 6th man of the year candidate. He's been dynamite. Kevin Herter's solid. The Kings are just solid. And a major topic of conversation when the trade happened, and even now, was the Tyrese Haliburton for Domantas Sabonis trade. So I want to revisit what I said back then, when everybody was saying that the Kings got fleeced. How do you trade a guy like Tyrese Haliburton, who's that good, who's that young? And yes, Tyrese Haliburton is awesome. He's awesome. The Pacers are really good this year, and he's been incredible. I think he's leading the league in assists. He's like at a 24-12. He's been great. But you know who else has been great for the Sacramento Kings? Domantas Sabonis. And not just that. The Kings last year broke their playoffless drought, where they hadn't made the playoffs before last year since 2006. So when everybody was telling me that it was a trade rape by the Indiana Pacers, I said not so fast. And guess who was right? Yours truly. Because not only is Domantas Sabonis the 3rd or 4th best center in the league, All-NBA player last year, but it unlocked De'Aaron Fox, and De'Aaron Fox is just as good, if not better, than Tyrese Haliburton. And that's not a knock against Tyrese Haliburton, because he's been incredible. But De'Aaron Fox is just as good, if not better. So yeah, the Sacramento Kings were really good last year, taking a step forward this year, light the beam. Those teams are so much fun. I try and watch all the Sacramento Kings games I can get, along with Oklahoma City and Minnesota for that matter, because Anthony Edwards is so much fun to watch. So we mentioned a couple of the rookies, Kayson Wallace for Oklahoma City, Chet Holmgren. This rookie class, it's been outrageously good. Wemby and Chet are at the top of the class, but guys like Brandon Miller, Asur Thompson, Kayson Wallace, who we mentioned, Anthony Black, Bilal Coulibaly, Derek Lively, who we mentioned, Keontae George for the Jazz, Brandon Podinsky, Jaime Jaquez for the Heat, who you knew was going to be solid for the Heat, Grady Dick, Jordan Hawkins. All these guys are making impacts for their teams and are playing well. This is an incredibly deep, deep rookie class. And we haven't seen the best of Scoot Henderson. I still think he's going to be very good. He's gotten hurt. The other Thompson twin for the Rockets has gotten hurt, and the Rockets are playing well. An incredibly impressive rookie class. Really, really, really good. And all those guys compete defensively. I mean, Brandon Miller for the Hornets has basically been already thrust into guarding the best perimeter defender on the opposing team each night, whether that's small forwards like Paul George, whether that's Jalen Brunson types. I mean, he's been a revelation defensively for the Hornets. You can tell that guy's a real, real player. So yeah, an incredibly impressive rookie class. One last thing before we go. I mentioned them at the end of the monologue last week. I'm going to do it again this week. And yes, I'm calling on my buddy, Johnny Lazarus, big time Johnny Lazarus. We got to talk Rangers. This is another call to you. Hopefully we can do that soon. But yeah, the Rangers, all they do is win. 4-game winning streak. They're 12-2 with one overtime loss. They are a +18 goal differential. This team has the ability to be special, has an opportunity to be special. The Knicks are good. The Rangers can be special and actually win a title for New York City. With that said, we're going to bring on a recurring guest, somebody who I haven't had on in a while. We're going to talk about the NFL at large. We're going to talk a little bit about the Giants and what this win means for them and their potential draft stock. We'll get to him in just a matter of moments. So I haven't spoken to this guy on the podcast in a while. Our New York Giants were one of our predictions that did not go well. We'll get to that in a little bit. But I want to talk about the league at large because I think this is a really weird season. Got none other than recurring guest Shai Ellberger. He's back. Shai, what's good, bud? How you doing?
Doing well. Giants getting right back into the playoff race after yesterday's win. But we'll talk about the rest of the league, I'm sure.
So we normally do this at the midway point of the year, and considering Thanksgiving is this week, we're recording on a Monday evening before the big Monday night game tonight. We had to get it in before the recording because we both want to watch the Monday night football game. This is a very strange season in a sense where it seems like all the good teams are incredibly, incredibly flawed, where I'm not really sure the good teams are really good. Like, the NFC has two really good teams, maybe three, if you want to count like Detroit or Dallas, but it's San Francisco, who I think is the best team in the NFC when they're right, and Philadelphia, who just hasn't looked as good as they did last year. And in the AFC, besides for the Chiefs, so we think of the Chiefs as this high-powered offense, but it has not been that way, but their defense is fantastic. Like, who else is really good in the AFC? Like, Shai, is this the weirdest season you can remember?
For all the types of questions where it's like, is this the whatever of recent memory? It's always so hard to remember other seasons, like where there's so much that goes on.
This is weirder in a sense where it's just like there's no grouping of teams that week in and week out is like puts together really impressive tape without having a whole bunch of clunkers on there.
So, yeah, so no team is, like, just rolling through the regular season and is going to go 15-2. But I just feel like San Francisco, they had that 3-game losing streak, which was out of character. One was, like, a bad weather game at Cleveland. Then they lost to Minnesota, surprisingly. Then I forget who the third one was. But like the other seven games,
they lost to the Bengals.
The Bengals, okay. So it's like the other seven games, they've been dominant. They were just dominant this past week against Tampa. And like, I just think because football games are once a week and so few games, like we have to react to every game. So this is just like fast forward a month from now, or 6 weeks from now, 7 weeks even, whatever, the Niners are finishing up and they're like 13-4. And the fact that they had a 3-game losing streak in you know, October into November is like just a blip on the radar. But yeah, also like, so Philly, San Francisco, I agree. And then I would include Detroit and Dallas as like solid teams that could each definitely win one or two playoff games. And then in the AFC, yeah, the Chiefs are just like, it's Mahomes. Their defense is really good. Kelsey, it's like, he looks like he's slowing down, but then like he'll randomly, like tonight, maybe he'll go like 7 for 120 and 2 touchdowns. Baltimore is really good. They, you know, they have like every, I feel like every year Baltimore with Harbaugh has like 2 or 3 like really weird games where they just like blow a lead with 6 minutes left or they lose to a team.
It's more than two or three.
But that's like all of their losses, and then they end up as, you know, 11-6, and they're like right there. Now, I feel like last season and a couple seasons, Lamar got hurt at the end of the season. So, yeah, you know, if that happens again, obviously it all changes. But I think Baltimore, Kansas City, I still like am pretty pro Buffalo. I know they've been so inconsistent, and people like, I just feel like love to hate on Buffalo. They've lost some bad games. I just feel like, you know, especially now with the Bengals, maybe we'll talk about the Bengals, but like, yeah, I'm off the Bengals, obviously, without Burrow. Yeah, I think it's Buffalo.
Bengals. But it's funny Buffalo, because the Bengals were one of those teams before Burrow got hurt that you were like, okay, I know what the record is, but this team is ascending and is going to be taken seriously. Maybe, you know, I thought they were going to win that division if he stays healthy.
Right. I mean,
I thought they were going to go really far. I thought they were going to win the AFC if he stays healthy.
Burrow is a slow start because of the injury, but then we just referenced them beating San Francisco. It seemed like, you know, I think they just had a bye week also, like they were going to just come out and just kind of move up those rankings. So that really sucks that what happened to them. But this is the weirdest season. It's like, I don't know, there's some weird storylines, but every year I feel like we have these crazy storylines that are like so unbelievable. Last year with the Giants, you know, that was one. The Vikings going 11-1 in one score games. Geno Smith, like I'm thinking these off the top of my head, like, that might be it, honestly. But either way, I think like every season you kind of have these different things. And that's what's so fun to try to predict what's going to happen, because a million things happen we don't see coming.
I was high on the Lions. We'll get to our predictions that we're proud of and we're not proud of. I was high on the Lions. But even then, like, I trust the Lions, but I'm not sure I really trust the Lions because their defense is so bad. I mean, I trust them more than Dallas because they'll potentially have a home playoff game, as opposed to Dallas is going to have to go on the road. But, like, do you really trust the Lions?
I think you don't want to admit that you don't trust the Lions because of your boy, Jared Goff, who looked pretty bad a couple weeks ago. Wasn't looking too good yesterday.
He got hot. Dallas' defense is better than the guy Goff.
Dallas' defense is better than Detroit's defense.
Yeah, but they employed Dak Prescott and Mike McCarthy.
Yeah, so okay. So that's another great example. Dak's having a great year. He's had a few like 4 or 5 like really good games in a row. And no mention Goff.
But it's meaningless because first of all, who have they beaten? Their most impressive game arguably was a loss against the Eagles.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we'll see.
Yeah, I'm out on Dallas as long as Dak Prescott's their quarterback and Mike McCarthy is their coach. But okay, so it's just a weird year where there's really about 3 teams you trust, and one in the AFC, and we'll get to your Miami Dolphins because I want to ask you about them, but let's talk about our predictions, because we do this before every season. We throw a couple of things out there. We put it on wax, Some of them hit, some of them don't. What's one of them that you're very proud of and one of them that you're not?
Okay, so you may have to go first, but also I was definitely hoping you had some recollection of what my predictions were.
Yeah,
I definitely don't remember.
I remember you were very high on the Minnesota Vikings, which at one point was looking not great. And now
I stand by that. Well, I think one was
we'll get to Josh Dobbs in a second. I think you were also high on the Packers.
No, definitely not, because I did not like Love. But maybe Houston. I feel like Houston. I remember touting D'Amico Ryans.
We both liked Houston. Yeah. We're going to take credit for that one.
All right,
I'm going to take credit for my Lions and Jaguars.
Oh, I have another good one. Yeah.
I was on the Lions. You know, I thought that division was going to be really weird, and it is, but I thought it was going to be worse than it is because I just think Minnesota's been better, which is crazy.
Their defense has been better than it was, which we always, I feel like when a team defense is so bad, they fire their DC. Usually if they hire the next one, there's always like that one-year bump. Plus, we know Flores is a good defensive coordinator.
Yeah, he's been impressive for them. But, yeah, no, I'm going to take credit for my Lions. And Jacksonville, I said that they were going to win the division. It's not looking as rosy as it was probably like a month ago. But then again, Lawrence seemed to have been a little bit banged up. This was a major get-right game this past weekend. I still am high on the Jaguars. And, yeah, we'll take credit for the Titans. But one I'm not proud of, obviously, outside the Giants, is I thought the Bears were going to go 9-8 or something like that. And needless to say, the Bears are not going 9-8. That was pretty ugly.
I think every year I take Pittsburgh, so I'm assuming I did this year.
Yes. Yeah,
they are 6-4. So I'll take the credit, but this seems like a situation where the advanced stats say they should not be 6-4.
Well, they've been outgained yardage-wise every single week of the regular season, which is nuts.
The thing is, though, like we always say, even when we're talking about the better teams, like if you have a really good defense, you can win in the playoffs. The Steelers have a really good defense. So like if their first round game, let's say they were like the 6 or whatever, they played, you know, at Miami, or Miami had to go to Pittsburgh. Like I feel like they could slow them down a little bit. Now their offense is really bad. So let's say they played Cleveland, like that would be a 13-10 game. They could win that game. Anyway, I'll take it
was on 6-4,
but not impressive. I think what was another one? I probably was high in Miami because I like McDaniels. I think I had Seattle to win the NFC West. That seems unlikely now, but like a couple of weeks ago, they were close.
I also want to give us some credit because we both thought the Rams were going to be better than everybody projected because we just had respect for Sean McVay. And Stafford has played enough where they've, you know, they've been.
And Kupp's been out for a lot of it. I was definitely questioning if Purdy would be able to replicate year one. I remember saying, like, now there's an offseason of tape on him. And to be honest, like, the first few weeks he was great. Then he had the 3-game losing streak where he was throwing picks. And I'm like, oh, he's regressing to the mean. This was always going to happen. But then he's been great again the last 2 weeks. Yesterday had a perfect passer rating. We all acknowledge like San Francisco is a great situation, coaching, scheme, playmakers, you know, it's ideal in every way. But he's only played, you know, less than 20 games so far. Like he is a 7th round young quarterback who continues to win and put up numbers. And like, you know, it's at some point I will have to just admit, like, maybe he's pretty good. Is he a superstar? Maybe not. But is he like Alex Smith? Like, why can't he be Alex Smith? And with San Francisco, that could be really good.
And considering the state of the quarterback position in the NFL right now, which is at an all-time low, like, if you were just picking guys straight, right, just like starting a franchise straight, like, how many guys are you taking before Brock Purdy? I'm not sure there's 10.
Like
off the top of my head, Mahomes, Allen, Burrow, assuming everybody's healthy. Lamar, Hurts, Tua, Goff.
You're not going to say Herbert.
No, Herbert, Lawrence.
And DeVito. So what is that, 10?
Yeah, Tommy D. Okay, so that's 9 guys. But Purdy's right there. Like, like Purdy's better than Dak.
Oh, Dak. Yeah, that's an interesting one. Or Geno.
I think Purdy's better than Geno.
Rodgers and Stafford, the old people.
I wasn't counting those guys, but fine.
Right. The player,
he's in the top half of the league.
That's right. All right. If he's Alex Smith, who was never top 5, but always like 8, 9, 10, 11, very efficient, not a lot of turnovers, very good win-loss record, you know, that they'll do damage if their team is question is, like, when he's due for a contract, which is still probably 2 years away, like, what is he getting at that point? But we'll see. That's another 2 years of seeing what his deal is.
You kick the can down the road and you figure it out for them if you're the Niners. One guy who we poured dirt on, who before the season we didn't know what to make of this team. Talking about quarterback Russell Wilson and the Denver Broncos. Started out pretty ugly. We thought the Broncos may get the new coach bump from Sean Payton. They give up 70 points to the Dolphins, and it looks like they're going to go completely in the tank. But right now, they're, after, you know, winning a very exciting Sunday night football game against the Minnesota Vikings, they're 5-5, I think, or 6-5. No, they had their bye, so they're 5-5. And they're in the thick of it, and Russell Wilson, who everybody clowned on, has played pretty well, and he engineered a nice drive for them at the end of the game. What's your take on the Broncos?
I could not believe how poorly last year went. And like everyone, it was like, okay, so the last couple of years in Seattle, he was declining, and then he's just done. And he's on, you know, last year, it was just so bad. We also all acknowledge that the coach, Nathaniel Hackett, was horrendous, league worst, got fired before the end of the season. And like, maybe we all just didn't really account for how bad of a situation that was. And then the change from going from that to Sean Payton, who I do think there's an argument either way if he's actually like a really good coach, because with Breeze, you know, they only won one Super Bowl, only got to one Super Bowl, right? Beat the Colts. They didn't get to any others. And but still, he's a great offensive mind, system, like that changed for Wilson. But then again, we get impatient with games being once a week, and so they start slow, which we see a lot with new coaches and new offensive systems. They obviously had the 70-20 loss to Miami, so everyone remembers that. But the last 4 weeks now, it's 2 against Kansas City, Buffalo, and a hot Minnesota team. They're 3-1 in those. The defense has been really good. For Wilson, he's not like playing at some Pro Bowl level, but he's making plays behind the pocket and just throwing accurately. I think his percentage is high. And like, even these games also, like, they're not winning 34, you know, 27. They're all pretty low scoring in the 20s or the teens. And he's doing just enough. So with the AFC also as it is, like, Chargers are not so good. Raiders aren't so good. Burrow's hurt. Like, Jets are not gonna make it. There's a path for Denver to definitely be in the playoff race, which they are now, and try to sneak out a spot.
Who do you think gets the last playoff spot in the AFC? Because if we think that if everything holds the way it is right now, where your division winners are Jacksonville, the Dolphins, the Ravens, and the Chiefs.
So I'll say Buffalo as 5, and I'll say one of Cleveland or Pittsburgh is 6, and then we have one of Cleveland or Pittsburgh and the Chargers and the Broncos. So
and Houston. I mean,
Houston. And Houston, right. So I probably have to like look at remaining schedules, honestly. Right. Just not
Buffalo's
knowing
Buffalo's remaining
that,
schedule like, is very difficult, by the way. Have you seen what the remaining schedule is?
For who?
Buffalo. They still have the Eagles. I think they still have Dallas. Not a lot of gimmies for Buffalo.
Yeah, Houston plays the Titans. The last Yeah, see, Houston's pretty favorable. They have that. Oh, Houston-Denver will be a huge game in Week 13. But then they finish with Jets, Titans, Browns, Titans, Colts. So that's pretty favorable for Houston. Denver plays Detroit, New England, Chargers, Raiders, also pretty easy. Yeah, it'll be tough. Hopefully it's not injuries that dictate, like, God forbid, like a Stroud gets hurt or something to that effect.
But back to Denver, I mean, listen, we all clowned on Russell Wilson also because he was acting like a diva, right? He was acting all strange, you know, Broncos country, let's ride, like all this weird corny shit that he was pulling. And the play was abysmal. But it's not like he was that old or just like, is he like just absolute trash now? So, I mean, it's nice to see that with Sean Payton, they're back in the mix, especially after getting beat by 50 points not that long ago. I mean, kudos to them for getting back in. I mean, they won a couple of tough games, like when, you know, they were heavy underdogs in all of those games.
Yeah.
So kudos to them. Another crazy story, the Josh Dobbs thing. Starts out with the Arizona Cardinals, barely makes the roster, gets the starting job. They were way more competitive than their record showed. Then he gets traded at the deadline. Any team could have had him. Minnesota picks him up after the Cousins injury. He's playing well for them. Minnesota's in the mix to win a playoff spot. I know I asked this about, you know, the NFL season at large, but I don't think we've ever seen anything like this in the NFL. I mean, the only thing I could compare it to in terms of sports was like Linsanity, where Jeremy Lin had his run for like 2 weeks where he just went crazy, you know, winning improbable games for the Knicks, which was a wonderful time to be alive. And this Dobbs thing is kind of crazy like that too.
I don't say Linsanity's name in vain. That was a time us New York fans will always remember, that 3 week period in 2011. There's just so much more also to Dobbs than even you said. Like, he was drafted, like, I feel like before the Cardinals, like, no one really knows what his deal is. He was drafted 6 years ago. Since he was drafted, he played on Pittsburgh, Jacksonville, Pittsburgh, Cleveland, Detroit, Tennessee, and then Cleveland again this offseason.
Spot started for Tennessee in a playoff game.
You're right. He's had the random spot starts, gets traded from Cleveland to Arizona right before week one, where basically Arizona cuts Colt McCoy, who was their starter all training camp and preseason. They trade like a seventh for Dobbs and name him the starter to start the season a week later. And everyone's like, okay, this is like the clearest sign of a tank job ever for Arizona. But then he's not horrible. Like, they lose a close week one. They lose the Giants week two in that game everyone remembers where they were up 20-0 at the half. Then they beat Dallas week three or four. I forget which week that was. And they're, like, pretty respectable. And it's like, oh, at that point, it was a crazy story, like Dobbs. But then I feel like the sample size got a little bigger. He started to play worse. Arizona starts to lose. And Kyler's coming back. And so they make the decision to just to bench Dobbs, and that's it for him. And we're like, all right, like, that makes sense. And then the Cousins injury, we're all wondering what's going to happen with Minnesota. They're going to trade for a QB, trade for Brissett, trade sign Wentz.
And Minnesota started out super slow. They couldn't win a game, and you're super just like, they go in the tank.
But Jefferson's injured. But it's like, NFC is not strong, as we said. Like, what were they, like 3-4 or something? It's like, they shouldn't be throwing the towel. Dobbs has already been benched by Arizona, so that just made a lot of sense, trade with some low-round pick. And, yeah, I mean, he came into Minnesota as the backup, but then the guy they were starting, of course, gets injured. Dobbs comes in, doesn't know anyone's name, doesn't know the plays, leaves them to victory. It is a crazy, crazy thing, and, like, there's still 7 games left, so there's a lot more that could happen. Like, he could flame out. That wouldn't shock me. He could lead them to the playoffs, win a playoff game. That would be crazy. Somewhere in between where he's just like average and the Vikings go, you know, 8-9. It is a great story. We don't see a journeyman. Like, I was going to look up actually, I feel like Geno Smith played on a bunch of teams between like the Giants and the Seahawks, but No, I'm totally wrong. Just
no, it was the Jets. It was the Giants and
Jets, Giants, Chargers, Seahawks. Yeah, so not a guy that has on like eight teams and then starts for like basically a whole season. It is very, very rare.
Yeah, I mean, and he's playing super, but he's not just like throwing the ball, like he's running around.
Right, he's playing like
Michael
well.
Vick some nights, and it's just it's a wild, wild viewing experience. Like, would you ever want to bet against Josh Dobbs right now? Like, it's just, he seems like, you know, just somebody you wouldn't want to bet against.
And then the other thing is Cleveland having had traded him right before the season. Like, if he was their backup, they would probably still be in very heavy playoff contention.
And we mentioned, you know, the state of quarterbacking in the NFL. Like, have there been 15 better quarterbacks than Josh Dobbs this year?
All right, so the 10 we just named, and then well, DeVito is 11. And then we have, I mean, Sam Howell is like fourth in the NFL in passing yards, but obviously I don't think we can. If you lose to the Giants twice in a year, you can't be top 20.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of empty calorie stats there. But I don't think Sam Howell's bad either.
No, this year, Dobbs has been, you know, 13th, 14th best.
Crazy. Absolutely crazy. Another quarterback and team that we've taken, you know, have gone on swings of is the Miami Dolphins and Tua. A weird game on Sunday. They're still leading the AFC East. The offense has come down to earth a little bit, but the defense is improving. Mike McDaniel is still a great soundbite, but not as fun of a soundbite when his team's losing. What do you make of your Miami Dolphins right now?
So, I mean, you know, Mike McDaniel, everyone loves him. I love him. I feel like I was early on loving him.
Yes.
The offense obviously is really elite, like very hard to stop. The defense, I feel like, should be better than it is. But I know Ramsey just came back. He's already playing really well. And
two interceptions on Sunday.
Yeah, then the game ender was really nice. And, like, they have pieces. Tua, I'm sorry. I still, when I watch him play, very accurate. But, like, that is all I think. That's his only, like, above average quality. Yeah, I just feel like slow release, not so mobile, amazing receivers, and amazing offensive system. And he's accurate, which is important. But I don't, like, I watch him. I don't, like, have confidence that he's going to, like, bullet in some awesome pass to on third and, you know, 11. But I don't know. Anyway, the Dolphins' wins are Chargers, Patriots, early season Broncos, Giants, Panthers, Patriots, Raiders.
Not a lot of impressive wins.
No, I would say no impressive wins. Where their losses are to the Bills by 28, to the Eagles by 14, to the Chiefs by 7. So the three good teams they've played, they have lost to them and two of them by double digits. So it's hard to say, like, we haven't seen them beat a good team. They play the next 3 weeks, our Jets, Commanders, next 4 weeks, Jets, Commanders, Titans, Jets. So, I mean, what are they now? 7-3? So that's 11-3. Then they finish with Dallas, Baltimore, Buffalo. Like, that could be three losses. That's still 11-6, likely wins the division. And then they're really heading to a playoff game where we haven't seen them beat a winning team. So I don't know. It's hard to know exactly what to make. They haven't proven that they can do it, but they've also beat all the teams that they should beat.
Which team do you trust more in terms of a viable playoff contender? Not necessarily a Super Bowl contender, because I think from the AFC, it's really just the Chiefs, and that's basically it. But viable playoff contender, Jacksonville or Miami, who do you trust more and why?
I trust Miami more because they have the best player, which is Tyreek Hill. I do think who's the Jags coach I'm blanking on from the Eagles? Yeah. I feel like he's probably pretty good. Like, I don't think that's a big coaching discrepancy for McDaniel versus Peterson. I don't know. That would be a tough one. That'd be a cool Florida playoff game.
I would agree with you, and I'm not factoring in the fact that I think Jacksonville is going to win the division, is going to host a playoff game. Like, I'm just saying in a vacuum, I just think Miami's a bit better. And yeah, I think Tyreek Hill is the difference. I think both defenses are good. I think Miami's upper end talent defensively is a little bit better. I think Jacksonville's probably a little bit deeper, but I would trust Miami because of Tyreek Hill and the, and guys like Jalen Ramsey and the upper end talent. I just think it's a little bit better than Jacksonville's.
I think Jacksonville's defense, and this is full disclosure, I read this somewhere, but then I thought about it. Seems like they're better than, they're like underrated, because you don't really know too many players on their defense, but their defense is actually playing well.
I'm still high on Jacksonville in terms of a division winner. I'm not sure Houston is going to catch them. I know they beat them head-to-head once, but I think Jacksonville's going to take care of business the next time they play them. All right, we'll let you go on this. Obviously, our beloved New York Giants won a football game on Sunday. 31-19 over the Commanders. It says more about the Commanders than it does the Giants. Obviously, a lot of fans are quite upset because it – has put a dent in the tank job that is the New York Giants trying to get Caleb Williams or Drake May. Your thoughts?
I will say this. As much as I still think Jones potentially could be a good quarterback, I now have to seriously weigh two things. One is it'll now be just one out of five seasons where he was like pretty good. I guess you can count his rookie season, but even last season's pretty good. It was like 15 touchdowns, but it's pretty good. Still, it's one out of five, let's say one and a half out of five seasons. There's now two neck injuries that have cost him several games. And of course, a current torn ACL. So we're talking about a quarterback that has two neck injuries, a torn ACL, four out of five seasons were not good, and the Giants having an opportunity to draft a quarterback at the top of the draft in a draft that has good quarterbacks. I think it's hard to pass on a quarterback in that situation. In terms of, I guess that wasn't the question, it was more like, how do I feel about them winning? I've always maintained, I know we've said to each other, you know, every week it's all percentage chances of getting first pick. And like we were talking the other day, and I was like, when Tyrod's healthy, he's going to play. Whether or not that's a mistake or not, I think he would. Now, if DeVito actually continues to have like decent games, maybe he keeps playing. But the bottom line was, I never thought the Giants were losing out. And I've kind of always maintained that I thought they were going to win two or three more games and end up picking like fifth or sixth. I just didn't see them literally finishing worse than the Bears, Cardinals, Panthers, Titans, you know, the Patriots. Like, I just thought it was too unlikely.
Well, they need to lose to the Patriots next week.
I don't know if they're going to lose to the Patriots. I honestly don't. I could see them beating the Patriots. Like, I could just see that happening. So when I watch a game, I can't physically get angry or upset if the other teams or if the Giants score, the Giants win a game. Like, the Giants get an interception or force a fumble, I'm not throwing, you know, my phone on the ground. It's unnatural reaction. The only difference is that when the other team scores and the Giants lose, I'm just not upset because I understand there is a benefit to them losing. I still like to see them dominating the Commanders. I like to hear the fans booing in Washington because the Giants and Tommy DeVito are whipping their ass. I like to see, you know, Slayton make a good play and Saquon have a nice touchdown catch and, you know, Thibodeau get sacks and Okereke, who I thought was a really good free agent signing. He has 100 tackles, you know, like punching fumbles out, Dexter Lawrence dominating. Like, I want to see the players do well. So I acknowledge, like, they're going to win games. There's the players aren't going to try to lose. The coaches aren't going to put the worst players out to try to lose. Like, everyone wants to win. And however they end up, they end up. And we also just, we don't need to, like, we all know that drafting is a crapshoot. Like, picking first versus picking second, picking the third quarterback, it's not like it's, you know, 60% good versus 30% good versus 10. It's like 40, 35, 35. Like, it doesn't, it's just, you have to pick the right one. It's you pick first or third or fifth, you will be able to get the guy you want. And the only thing that matters is, were you right or wrong in that evaluation?
So here's my quick high level overview, right? I don't think if they go 3-14, if this is their token win, that they're out of the sweepstakes, or if they go 4-13 for that matter, given the other teams that are in the sweepstakes for the, you know, top three picks to try and get Williams or May. I also don't believe, from what I've been reading, that if they get the third, fourth, fifth overall pick and they're out of the running for the top two guys, that they're going to take a quarterback high in the first round. I think they'll probably wait on a guy, trade back in late in the first round or second round, because I think there's, you know, depth at that position, whether it's like Bo Nix, Penix, somebody like that. I'm not sure that if they had to, you know, take Marvin Harrison Jr. and then take like Bo Nix early in the second round, I'm not sure that's worse than doing, you know, Caleb Williams or Drake May and then building it out from there. Like, that may actually be preferable.
Yeah, I mean,
it will be taking a quarterback at some point within the first 2 days. That I'm 100% certain on.
I would probably think so, but here's two things. One is, Jones is going to be on the roster next year. They can't cut him. It's financially not feasible. So he's going to be on the team. Whether, you know, we the recovery from the torn ACL will dictate a lot, but like, let's say this is a normal 9-month thing. Let's say he's ready for week one. He could play. Either he's going to be the backup to a Tyrod type veteran. I don't know if it's Tyrod specifically or some other guy, or he's ready to start and the backup will be the some old guy. If they draft a guy first or second round, like, Jones is still going to be on the roster. So is Jones, like, is he going to start the season while the rookie is just waiting behind him? Then you get in the situation where, like, any bad Jones game, it's put the rookie in.
Well, is he the lame duck?
Or is Jones a backup to this rookie, and now you have a backup who was drafted by the team? He's making $48 million next year, but he's backing you up because, I don't know, because maybe he's not healthy or whatever. Well, the scenario was he is healthy. It's a really fascinating situation. I love Marvin Harrison Jr. So that was the other thing. Neither of us really watch college football. We see plays, we see random highlights, you know, we read, we follow a lot of people on social media. Marvin Harrison Jr. to me is like the best receiver prospect I can remember, just based on his hands, his footwork, his speed, obviously his DNA. It just seems like he's going to be amazing, like Julio Jones, AJ Green type. That's not a bad consolation prize if they pick fourth or fifth or third. No, I wouldn't be too upset if they ended up not getting QB high in the round. Also, like, they draft third, fourth, fifth, sixth, you could trade up to two. Like, it's not the craziest thing. We saw the Giants do it.
Well, hold on. It depends who is going to hold that pick, right?
Right. So let's say the Bears got 1 and 2. They may not take any quarterback in either of those spots. At worst, they're taking one QB, but not two quarterbacks.
Well, they're taking one.
Well, I don't know. Let's say Fields has a good rest of the season. Like, I don't know. Or, you know, is Arizona definitely taking a quarterback? Or are they committed to Kyler Murray? Who else? The Panthers don't have their pick. Patriots, yeah, they would take a quarterback. The Titans, they would. But I'm just saying, like, it's possible you could trade up to, you know, whatever. I don't know what the lineman situation is. In my opinion, it would.
Hold on, I want to stop you right there.
Okay.
I was about to say this. That is the one position I do not want them drafting high in the first round anymore. I've had enough. Their success rate there is terrible. is terrible. And I know that I've heard briefly that it's a wide receiver lineman draft, obviously after Caleb Williams and Drake May. I don't want them taking a lineman. Use your cap space for linemen who you know can play. They can't draft tackles. They can't draft them. So stop doing it. I'd rather them take Brock Bowers, the tight end from Georgia, who's like, can be Gronk incarnate. I'd rather they take him at four than a tackle that they're just going to miss on the pick. I can't do it anymore.
We can't take a tight end at four after the predecessor took a running back at two.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? Like, I want guys who can be good.
So so you make me agree with you, but also point out something obvious. The Giants' success rate drafting linemen has been awful for 10 years. I can't explain it because it's multiple GMs, multiple head coaches, and multiple offensive line coaches, and multiple offensive systems. And basically, since Eric Flowers was drafted in 2014, the only good lineman they have drafted is Andrew Thomas. So the other point of what I have to point out is they hit on Andrew Thomas, right? At number fourth pick, 2020, that was a tackle-heavy draft. It was him and Mekhi Becton.
Wirfs.
And Wirfs and Wills. And I think only Becton is bad, but Thomas is arguably the best. So they hit on that one. And if you hit on another Andrew Thomas at right tackle, that's ideal. That was obviously what we were all hoping for Evan Neal, was two bookend tackles. So here's my vision for offensive line next year, is I think Evan Neal has to move inside to guard and see if he can play there, because he can't play tackle anymore. He's already derailed two seasons. Let him try and guard. I totally agree that in free agency, the Giants need to sign like a legitimate right tackle starter. You know, if that's $14, $15 million a year, like someone like they did with Kareem McKenzie back in the first Super Bowl era, they signed him. Sean O'Hara was actually a no-name free agent signing, which was amazing. Like, remember, actually totally random, but recently Googling that signing, and it was like 5 years, like $4 million or something, like hilarious.
The cap has changed since then.
Yeah, but also he was an undrafted guy and they just identified him as someone who was pretty good. So like Shane signed Mark Lewinsky 2 years ago to like a 3-year, $18 million contract. He has been bad. That was a bad signing. So I will get nervous if we see a pattern of bad offensive line signings and draft picks. Josh Azudu has not been good. That was a draft pick. Marcus McKeithen has not been good. That was a draft pick. I don't think you can stop drafting and trying. People always say that's the argument that I always see is that people are like, and the Giants have neglected O-line for the last 10 years. They haven't neglected it. They've drafted
not at all. They've done anything but neglected. They just can't
do it right. They just can't do it right. So I see offensive line next year as like an Andrew Thomas, Bredesen and Pugh, like play guard, John Michael Schmitz at center. Hopefully he's good. He's been okay. And then Neal is a guard, and then you sign someone, and maybe you sign a B-level guy also to compete and draft another guy in the third or fourth round. Like, you have to keep adding to it. But I agree, a free agent signing has to be a legit starter.
I don't want them using a top five pick on a tackle.
No, I don't think they will. I don't think they'll do that. I don't think so. I think it's going to be quarterback or receiver. Oh, and the last thing I wanted to say was, again, I probably haven't watched Drake May or Caleb Williams play more than a half a game total. There are just things I'm seeing about Caleb Williams that make me nervous about his ability to succeed in a New York market.
I understand. He seems a little soft around the edges.
To be soft, it's you know, the fingernail painting, and it's like you can just see it, right? If it gets to him early, is it going to get to him? I'm just not sure. Now, that could be like, you know, 3-5 years from now, it's like the worst take of all time. And again, I haven't watched. I'm just saying, you know, the other thing was he came into the year, as far as I know, I was like the Heisman favorite, and USC has it. Their defense, I know, is very bad, but like he's not going to win the Heisman, right? Like, definitely not even top three, probably. So, was it a flash in the pan? I don't know. Who knows? There's so much more time to the draft. But to answer the original question, I'm okay. They're going to win. They're going to win probably two more games, and they'll pick, you know, fifth or sixth, maybe seventh. It's okay.
The more and more I'm reading about it, I kind of want them to go, if I had my choice, it would go the Marvin Harrison Jr. route and then take like Bo Nix or Penix or trying to think of some of the other guys that are.
Then it's like, are you just drafting a quarterback just because you have to draft one? If you don't like him,
well, they have to draft one. They
isn't Bo Nix like 25 years old? Am I wrong about that?
No, he's definitely on the older side, but they have to draft one. They can't go into next year with Tyrod Taylor and Daniel Jones as being the only option. Yeah. They have to draft one.
Bo Nix will be 24 by next season, so that's kind of old for a rookie.
I don't care. They have to draft whatever, whoever they think the guy is. You have to take a guy. You have to.
A little panics.
Maybe. Whatever it is. I just, you know, I obviously would like Caleb Williams or Drake May. If it ended up being like Marvin Harrison Jr. or even like Brock Bowers, I know you're going to laugh, but that guy, if he's Rob Gronkowski or Travis Kelce, he's worth that spot. I understand.
Yeah, but Gronk was what, a fifth-round pick?
Second. Like, I think he went in the second.
Second? Oh, yeah. Why did I say fifth?
Aaron Hernandez was in the fourth round. They drafted him the same year.
Right.
But the point is, they need to draft a quarterback at some point higher up because that's just the way Jones's contract works. It just makes sense. And I don't want them taking a tackle in the top five. That's my.
I don't think they'll take another tackle. I don't think they'll do that. Another tackle in the top five.
Well,
here's the first. I just a Google mock draft. The first one I click on from Sports Illustrated. Giants picking fifth. Caleb Williams.
Fifth.
Marvin Harrison going number one.
Fifth. He's gonna slide to five. What side?
Man, three to the Patriots. Two offensive tackles in the top five, and then Caleb Williams. And then Brock Bowers, six.
Crazier things have happened. Okay, well, last question. Last question. Yeah. Switching gears a little bit. Your 2 cents on the Knicks right now.
No, I'm not a good one to ask because I have not watched Knicks. I feel like I don't get into basketball until football starts.
Okay. Your Super Bowl pick.
San Francisco versus.
You want to say
Buffalo.
Buffalo. I've got San Francisco, Kansas City. I got San Francisco winning. Got San Francisco winning. Brock Purdy, MVP of the Super Bowl. My guy, Brock.
Do you think he holds out for a new contract if that happens? He's making like 500K.
He should. I don't know what the rules are, but like he should. Wouldn't you?
I would, yeah. Or yeah, I probably would. But then that's probably a lot of financial maneuvering San Fran would have to do.
I'm sure they'll figure it out. They're smart over there. They know what they're doing. Shai, this was great. Thanks so much for doing it. Obviously, we'll talk offline. Let's go, Giants, kind of. Just
remember, it's midseason and the Giants still control their own destiny.
It's midseason and the Giants still control their own destiny. Oh, do you like some picks for Thanksgiving? I know we do our picks against the spread. I took a major L this week, 1-4. You were 4-1.
The spreads are so high, but it's hard to see any of the big dogs losing. I mean, winning.
Do the 14 tees, all the favorites on the first two days.
I did all four favorites as a money line parlay. It's like plus 140.
It's a nice payout. I endorse it. Anyway, Shai, this was great. Thanks so much for doing it. Always a pleasure. And we'll speak soon, bud.
All right. See ya
later.
Thanks again to recurring guest, Mr. Shai Ellberger, for coming back on to talk all things NFL, talk a little bit about the Giants, what this win means to the long-term health of the franchise, going around the league, what we were right about to start the year, what we were wrong about to start the year. Always good stuff from him. That's episode 232. Oh, by the way, at the time of this recording on the outro, the Knicks lost a tough one on the road and the Rangers lost a tough one on the road. Still not worried about it. It was kind of due, but it is what it is. That's episode 232 for the love of the game. Take us out, Big East.
I won't let my active psoriatic arthritis joint symptoms define me.
Emerge as you. Tremfya guselkumab is proven to significantly reduce joint pain, stiffness, and swelling in adults with active psoriatic arthritis. Some patients even reported less fatigue as assessed by survey 1 week prior. Results may vary. Tremfya is taken by injection 6 times a year after 2 starter doses at week 0 and 4.
Serious allergic reactions may occur. Tremfya may increase your risk of infections and lower your ability to fight them. Before treatment, your doctor should check you for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms of infection, including fever, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough. Tell your doctor if you had a vaccine or plan to.
Emerge as you. Learn more about Tremfya, including important safety information, at Tremfya.com or call 1-877-578-3527. See our ad in Food & Wine magazine. For patients prescribed Tremfya, cost support may be available.
Whether you're shopping for grads, getting an early gift for dad, or just looking for a little something new or used for your shelf, you'll find it at HPB. And you'll get almost everything for an extra 20% off during the big sale at Half Price Books this Memorial Day weekend. Saturday, May 25th through Monday, May 27th, save big in-store at your local Half Price Books and at HPB.com. Offer cannot be combined with other coupons. Exclusions apply. To learn more, visit HPB.com.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Save big money on everything for your next project at Menards. It doesn't matter what job you're up against. Works, cordless power tools, and lawn equipment have the power for you to get the job done faster and easier. The PowerShare 20-volt batteries run longer on a single charge, and they can be used with other Works tools. Check out Menards' entire selection of Works cordless power tools and lawn equipment today on Menards.com.
Save big money at Menards.
From muddy jungle paths to snowy trails to rolling sand dunes, the 2024 Nissan Pathfinder is ready to take you to some of the most phenomenal destinations on Earth. In a Pathfinder, it's more than just the arrival. The real excitement comes from the ride to get there. With 7 drive modes, Pathfinder's available intelligent four-wheel drive is built for some of the most epic journeys. So chase bigger, better, more exciting adventures in the 2024 Nissan Pathfinder. Intelligent four-wheel drive cannot prevent collisions or provide enhanced traction in all conditions. Always monitor traffic and weather conditions.